Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There is no better group of plants for flower power than forms of the shrubby potentilla, producing single rose-like flowers continually from June to the first frost.
Hello and welcome to This Week in the Garden. I'm Peter Seabrook, here to help with your gardening quandaries. Our thanks to Suttons of Torquay, sponsors of this podcast. The back end of January is very much conference and international trade show season, as far as I'm concerned. And in the next week or so, I've got the Horticultural Trades Association contact conference. There's the British bedding plant people. They've got their conference and annual general meeting. The Garden Centre Association down in Bristol, they've got their annual review. That's always very useful because we see literally hundreds of pictures taken on British garden centres from all points in the compass. And then in Germany, there's the IPM at Essen, the International Horticultural Meeting and Gathering. I think there'll be 8 or 10 halls packed with everything to do with horticulture. You need to get to some of these things, mainly to meet people, and then just hear what's planned for the new gardening year. From what I've heard so far, there's lots of new plants, lots of new ways to grow things, and the whole business is really buzzing. For something like 12 years, every September, I would load my lawnmower into the front seat of the car and drive to Birmingham on a Friday and do a little gardening insert for a live TV programme called Pebble Mill at One. And when I got there, hopefully it was 9, 10 o'clock, and over those 12 years, I don't think we missed a Friday, regardless of weather. I would put myself in the hands of the producer, director of the day, and on a number of occasions, it was one John Smith from the Midlands. And John has kindly agreed to join us today. John, we have very many happy memories, don't we, of Pebble Mill at One in Birmingham?
Yes, the programme started daytime television, really. We had a very good editor who gave us a fairly free hand. And things got started there that even nowadays are still being carried on television.
Perhaps for those who didn't watch or know about Pebble Mill at One, we should explain. I mean, it was a magazine programme, started with music, didn't it?
Yeah.
And then you would have all kinds of things, 5 days a week from Monday to Friday.
But the main thing was most of it was live.
Yeah, absolutely. Regardless of the weather.
Oh, we took advantage of the weather sometimes. I mean, with the music, you quite often would get people like Stuart Gillis or some of the big American stars would come in and we'd say to them, excuse me, you're not in the studio today, you're outside in the snow. Most of them would just put the coats on and off they went, you know.
So you would start with music and end with music.
Yeah.
And then there would be a theme some days. I mean, you were the pioneers of in-studio cooking, weren't you?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the big names on television of the day started off on Pebble Mill at One. Gary Rhodes was part of it. Brian Turner.
Yeah.
And, of course, Michael Smith, who was very famous because he did all the cooking for a TV drama called Upstairs, Downstairs.
But then you did fashion, you spawned the clothes show.
Yeah.
And did all kinds of travel items.
We went down as far as Antarctica and as far north as Trondheim in Norway and lots of places in between. And I seem to remember you, Peter, joining me down in Monte Carlo.
I'd forgotten about that. What, with the helicopter trip?
Yes.
Yeah.
In the cactus garden, if I remember correctly.
It was, right on the cliffside there.
Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic.
I remember we flew you in the morning and you flew out that evening.
Yeah.
And we produced a half-hour programme in the middle.
Now, John, you had some very good connections with the services, the Army, the Navy and Air Force.
Particularly with the Navy. They were the people that landed the two Harrier jump jets at Pebble Mill. That came about because we were asked to do the decommissioning of the Ark World in about 1983. I was interested in bringing a Harrier in, and we're getting nowhere. And when we were on Ark World, I was up on the bridge with the captain, and I was asked him, I said, what are you doing next? He said, oh, I'm going to be in charge of the Fleet Air Arm. I said, pardon? He said, the Fleet Air Arm. I said, Harrier jump jets? He said, yes. I said, Pebble Mill? He said, give me 6 months and we'll have one with you.
I remember that, John. How far away would I have been? I suppose about 150 yards or 100 yards. And when you dropped that down into the backyard at Pebble Mill, blew all my seeds and pots and everything to the four winds.
Yes, it's a bit of a thrust though, wasn't it?
A bit of a thrust, I think, yes, both when it came down and even more when it went up again. What would health and safety and risk assessment say about that these days?
Well, my answer would be the best people in the world were flying them.
Yeah.
But I think it would be very hard to do a lot of the things that we did at Pebble Mill. I mean, we had helicopters. The only helicopter we didn't bring in was a Chinook. And the pilot came up with that recce of the building and he said, I've only got 6 foot clearance with the blades. He said, I would do it if it was an emergency. But landing in a TV studio, I think that's a bit silly.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But we had all the other helicopters. The RAF did send some along. The Army sent some along. And, we had a lot. But we also did abseiling down onto the roof of the building.
We did all kinds of things. You talk about the roof of the building. I mean, on one occasion, they had somebody from a circus jumped from the roof into a big collection of cardboard boxes.
It was a stuntman from the Enidin line. He jumped out just off one floor down from the roof and onto the cardboard boxes, you quite rightly say. Hurt himself a little bit, but he was quite happy. And after that, he actually did a series of stunts for the programme.
John, we have to mention presenters because you had four really good regular presenters. The late Donnie MacLeod, yeah, Bob Langley, David Seymour.
And Marion Foster.
I was with Marion just a few weeks ago. You put her through something when we opened the NEC buildings at Birmingham. Wasn't she on the lake?
Oh, yes, she was. You're absolutely right. We had her going around the lake and she fell in. What we didn't know that her wellies that she had on filled up with water, and when she was saying help, I thought from the scanner she was acting it up a bit, and she wasn't, but we got her out in time.
Didn't she have safety jacket or something on?
She had a safety jacket, but the weight of the wellies full of water was pulling her down.
And then John, I seem to remember you were trying to cook the biggest pancake ever on the Shrove Tuesday.
Yeah.
But nobody had calculated how long it would take to crack all the eggs to make the batter. All I remember is it must have been a scaffold pole on a sort of lever with a great big metal dish on the end. but then, John, a house was built, wasn't it? I mean, you were the forerunners of do-it-yourself and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, what happened there was it was when the house building was politically the right time to be building houses, they wanted to be building more houses. I went to the Daily Mail Ideal Home Show and asked the guys that built the houses there how long it would take them to build a house in the back garden. They said, well, we could do it in a week. And so we set them about. We blew the whistle on Monday lunchtime. And I said to them, right, it's got to be finished by Friday lunchtime. And they did. They had it finished. It was a four-bedroom detached house. We kept it up for a month. And every weekday, we had a new designer come in. So Jasper Conrad and all these people came in and put their four-bedroom to what was right, what was wrong. And I think you did the garden many times as well, Peter, didn't you?
John, we had two greenhouses. We had one that was double glazed and one that was single glazed, and we registered the heat input on the two.
Yeah.
And when the wind blew, and it really did off that 10-floor high building, it actually blew the heat out of an ordinary greenhouse, but the twin skinned one, it just held the heat. Yeah.
Can you remember when we built the hydroponics greenhouse?
Oh, yes.
That was ahead of its time.
And we were the early days of polytunnels, and I remember having a straw bale at the back entrance in the corridor, getting it steamed up before we moved into the polytunnel to keep that heated during the winter.
Yeah.
We did some crazy things, John.
Well, what we mustn't forget is that most of this was done in the winter months as well. You didn't have the advantage of the warm summers or whatever. Because in the summer we were off the air.
Yes, when all gardening programs went off the air, we came on.
Yeah.
And then we went off when they all started again.
Absolutely.
I think, John, the introduction of the polytunnel was my saviour because it meant that we could sow salads, several of the winter vegetables, and whatever the weather was, we could go into the polytunnel and have some protection. And then, of course, we could have an early start in the spring, again with the polytunnel, and have crops to harvest by the time the programme ended at the end of May. But, I mean, you didn't help me, John, because you would wheel out three cameras.
That was on a good day.
Well, exactly. But then one would go down, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And another one you would need to hold back for some reason because some damn singer needed something. And I'd be left with one camera.
Yeah.
And we'd be rehearsed for, 8 minutes. And then you'd say, oh, no, we've only got seven. And then it would be back to six, and you've only got one camera. I mean, you weren't always kind to us gardeners out there at the back with the wind blowing everything everywhere.
You have to work on the outside world, Peter.
And I meet gardeners now, or homeowners, I should say, who say thank you for being introduced to gardening by watching Pebble Mill at One on a Friday lunchtime.
But what was the size of the garden? 12 by 10, if I remember?
Yeah, exactly right. 10 foot by 12 foot. Spend a pound and pick enough fresh vegetables to feed a family of four at least once a week.
Yeah. It's not bad going, is it? In fact, you could do that nowadays and be relevant.
Everything that we did then is still relevant today. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, John. It's great speaking to you.
Nice speaking to you, Peter, as well.
My thanks to Suttons, sponsors of this podcast, and also my producer this week, Rich Jarman. I look forward to speaking to you next week. Discover more at sungardening.co.uk.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.